Okay, everybody, we're going to dissolve the breakout groups and bring us back for Paul Dobransky, and I'll let Lyon Goodman go ahead and introduce him and take it away. Why don't you go Steven? For it? Great.
Thank you. So I want to welcome everyone who's listening through our webcast or through our Maestro conference to this next segment of the Ultimate Men's Summit. We're very excited to have Dr. Paul Dobransky with us, who is an expert on men's psychology, and he's going to talk about a number of subjects, primarily what it means to be a mature masculine and what is mature masculine power. Before we go into that, I just want to mention that recordings of each topic will be available usually within about 24 hours after the session, which you can find on the calendar page. And we'll be talking for about 20 minutes, and then we'll have an opportunity for you to ask a few questions at the end, and then we'll also put you into groups, if you'd like, after this talk to discuss the topics. But if you have any questions or comments for us during the talk, please feel free to use our Facebook page, The Shift Network, or if you're on a webcast, use the question posting, and we'll see if we can get to some of your questions. If you're tweeting, use hashtag UMS, and now I'd like to introduce our guest. So, Paul Dobransky, who is known as Dr. Paul, is a psychiatrist and a television and radio personality. He's an author and a speaker, and he has several websites. The one I know best is menspsychology.com, and he delivers seminars on dating and relationships, and he's taught in many cities around the world. He's created a number of programs. One is called Mind OS, which is a synthesis of the disciplines of psychology and helps people develop their own character, their own maturity, their own ability to communicate and make decisions. And also he talks a lot about gender communication. How do men talk to women? How do women talk to men? And he is probably the most advanced person talking about dating and relationships in the field, because he takes a really deep look at science and psychology rather than just what are called the pickup artist guys who tell you how to have a good line to get the women you want. So very happy to have Paul here. He's also appeared in numerous television and radio programs, magazines such as Men's Health and Men's Fitness and even Cosmopolitan and Psychology Today. So welcome, Paul. Happy to have you here.
Oh, well, thank you. It's great to be in such illustrious company. Appreciate it.
It takes one to know one, doesn't it? So thanks. Paul, your topic title is Mature Masculine Power. So why don't we start with the definition of mature masculine power?
Well, sure. As a board-certified psychiatrist, I tend to think of the word mature and the word maturity maybe in a different light from how we normally use it in everyday life. You know, there's an area of psychology called positive psychology, which is, you know, one of the hot new areas besides the rediscovery of evolutionary psychology. And I think they actually address two different areas of the mind. What I really am by trade is essentially a unification theorist. You know, I unify models of psychology to make new, more simple models, hopefully more elegant models. And these are two opposite ends of the spectrum, I think, positive psychology and evolutionary psychology.
So, describe the difference between those two.
Well, you know, every school of psychology, you know, Jungian, Freudian psychology, psychodynamics, cognitive behavioral therapy, all of these, they tend to try to explain all of our behavior, but also tend to fail at explaining all behavior. They tend to be good for one particular area. For example, cognitive therapy is great for depression. Behavioral therapy is great for anxiety problems. Freudian psychoanalysis is fantastic, nothing better for being neurotic and for addressing issues of character. So that's probably the school that I'm the closest to is psychoanalysis, and I'm trained by a psychoanalytic institute in that area. So maturity has to do with what we call character. And normally we think of character as just being ethical or being a good guy. but there's much, much more to it. There are working parts to it. So I have kind of decoded those, things like having boundaries, having wisdom, and what is the anatomy of wisdom? What is the anatomy of our boundaries? These things all come together to make us on a spectrum of maturity. And for those who are into kind of more spiritual topics, that we might use more narrative stories and myths and even things like films and novels to explain, psychology is, I think, about to reach the point, the next level, where we can actually look at narratives and stories in a way that can even be more analytical, where we can actually, you know, decode what things mean, not just through a story, but through the working parts of psychology. So I'm right at the junction point between what you might call spiritual psychology and more hardcore neuroscience, the MRI machine type stuff.
Right. It sounds like you've taken what is known in the sciences of brain science, neuroscience, and the psychological sciences, and actually brought them all the way out to pragmatic how-tos for men. So
yes.
Is that true? Is that you take a very, very pragmatic approach? It's not just analytic.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from philosopher Bertrand Russell, who said, philosophy is the no man's land between science and religion. And philosophy predates psychology as a field of study and thought. So that's really what I am, as a philosopher, but I try to work at the junction point between hardcore science and between things that are more spiritual and invisible, and try to make it less magic-based and more real and repeatable,
and some
you
of
know,
the
scientific
some,
method.
Right, so some of the courses that you have, especially for men, go all the way out to the very pragmatic, like, how do I get a date? How do I have a
successful
relationship? What can I do as a man to feel my power or get a good career? So how do you bring that knowledge and information, which is pretty arcane for a lot of people if they haven't studied psychology, and bring it down to a practical how-to instruction manual?
Sure. I could give you an example of that, you know, going back to the phrase, what is mature masculine power? You know, that which is mature has to do with our character and our spiritual development, you could even say. And both men and women are quite equal in that area. You know, we have the equal ability to have good boundaries with each other, good ethics, make wise decisions, etc. And that's the area of positive psychology. But evolutionary psychology, which you asked about, I think its prime usefulness in our thinking is to explain instinct, to explain the animal part of being human. So in my models, the place where men and women are decidedly different and still equal is in the instincts, what I call gender instincts, which is one and the same as masculinity and femininity.
And what would you say so the distinctions are?
Well, we're like puzzle pieces that fit together. I definitely buy into Darwin and evolution, and I think there are areas where Darwin and Freud would most certainly agree when we're talking about instincts. Freud talks about things like drives and libido, and Darwin talked about the need for a species to survive and reproduce. Those are the twin goals of our genes and our instincts and our reflexes, the things we don't have to think about. So the species wouldn't exist if men and women were not very, very different instinctually, or what you could call unconscious or unconscious. So I view masculinity itself as being a set of reflexes that you can learn the specifics of. Frankly, not unlike modern superhero myths. You know, there's always superheroes that have a utility belt, and they have their special gifts that make them different from other superheroes. Most of them are male, and I think this is a very useful metaphor for looking at what masculinity is. So if you learn the specific tools of your utility belt, so to speak, then you're learning something that has existed for all human history, which are the specific reflexes of masculinity, those go hand in hand with feminine gender instincts, which are decidedly different from our instincts.
So what you're saying is men can actually learn these things. They're a set of lessons that we could learn, and I assume that in ancient cultures these were passed on from grandfathers to fathers to sons, but somehow that chain got broken, and most of us grew up without any really good instruction in how to be a man.
It did. I think it did get broken, and I think when we look at pop culture today, such things as, you know, the rise of superhero films being all popular now, or action films being on the comeback, I think that's directly related to what you're talking about, is that we're cut off from this source of grandfathering, if you will. It's beyond fathering. We don't have grandfathers either. We don't have a sense of heritage to our identity. So as a result, we not only are we cut off from knowledge, but we're even cut off from the stories that we used to learn these things through. So what I try to do is modernize this process by making it both storytelling, but also like going to school. You can learn lesson 1, 2, and 3 that would teach you the same things that maybe learning the story of the Count of Monte Cristo did 100 years ago, or that we see in such films today as the film Wanted, or Gladiator, or The 300. You know, we can learn through story, but we can simultaneously learn through specific lessons, specific instincts we can master individually.
Right. Movies are today's myths, aren't they? They pass down the culture. But the Greeks talked about having both lexis and praxis, the language-based learning that you learn in school. But then there's the practical learning that you learn by doing, like going out and asking women on a date.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. I tend to divide up those two ways of thinking into, the simple terms left-brained and right-brained. You know, psychoanalysts talk about declarative memory and procedural memory. It's just being left-brained or right-brained. We can learn through story, which is right-brained, or we can learn through memorizing lists and practicing specific skills. That's left-brained. I try to be right at the middle point between the two.
And in some of your trainings, you actually take men out and give them very practical lessons, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Describe that.
Sure. One of the biggest, no matter what a guy's level of skill or development in the area of relationships with women, it's always important to recall that the prime core sexual attractor for women has got to be the starting point of any relationship, no matter how much you have in common or whether you both want children or whether you both have the same politics and religion. If you don't start with sexual attraction, things will not be good down the road. And then we will see things like cheating and affairs and things like this, and divorce, frankly. So the prime core sexual attractor for women is not a pickup line, not dressing well, not being muscle-bound, but being mysterious. And this echoes back to a woman's experience of her own father in what Freud called the Oedipal period of life. Her dad was a gigantic, powerful, yet loving, but above all, mysterious being in her life. So with women, you got to keep the cards close to the vest when you first start getting to know them. But you keep it fun. It's both fun and mysterious. They want to solve you like a puzzle. They want to understand you. And you need to not get easily labeled by them. As soon as they label you, you're not as mysterious. You're now rendered safe. And ironically, less masculine because you are safe.
Safe is not sexy until you're in a permanent relationship, right?
And even once you're in a permanent relationship, you know, some guys that you know, if you talk to their grandparents who've been together 40 years, the grandma will say, you know, he still keeps me interested. There are still things to discover about him. So even in a committed, long-term relationship, mysteriousness in the man still has to be there. A great story for men about this specific item is the tale of Bluebeard. Bluebeard, the wealthy French nobleman, who was known to have had 100 wives one at a time and had one rule of marriage, which is you may never look in my secret room in my my chateau. And one by one, every woman had to give in. Curiosity killed the cat, literally, because each wife would have to sneak into the secret room, and that's where she would find the dead bodies of all the former wives. So it's just a metaphor. It's a metaphor for the dangerousness of being a man, and the fact that, you know, if you look at today's news stories, the gladiator sport of bad cheating men out there who've done great things for society, and we kind of ignore all that, Tiger Woods and Anthony Weiner and all these people, they make mistakes and they have character flaws just like any human being. But every man deserves some modicum of privacy and a fantasy life, even within the closest and most communicative of marriages.
That seems so to part go of against the idea of authenticity, of being open and truthful. Can you compare those two?
Sure. You can be open and truthful. Well, you can always be truthful. Always truthful. You can be truthful when you say, honey, this is my bathroom, and nobody ever better go in here because it's mine. That's being truthful. Or, honey, this is my email account, and it's mine, and nobody better ever read it. It's mine. That's truthful, and that's masculine. Now, being open, you can be 99.99% open about all kinds of areas of your life and what you think and how you feel and what you share with the woman. But once you reach 100% openness, there's a breakdown of good boundaries, and we are actually getting into an area psychologists call codependence when we are overly open. Let me explain this. Have you ever heard of a shape called a mandorla?
No.
Which in Latin it means almond. And there's a lot of talk about the golden mean,
yes.
the magic number called phi, which is seen throughout all of nature, the shape of a leaf, the shape of a wave, a crest of a wave on the ocean. The number phi is the mathematics of nature. It is the constant. Well, the ratio of phi, of length to width, of an almond shape, actually is the same shape that we can symbolically visualize the perfect degree of privacy versus openness in a relationship. So you imagine two circles intersecting. If they knew each other to the center of the other person, then those two circles make a shape in the middle called a mandorla, which looks like an almond shape. And the ratio of that shape is phi.
1:1. So that's 1.1618.
Yeah, 1.1618. 1.1618. And to my mind, that's a kind of geometric mathematical proof of the perfect degree of sharing in a relationship. And if you look at the area under the curves of what you share with a woman versus what is totally private, there's actually just a tad more privacy than what ought to be shared, which means that you always retain your individuality.
That's great. I think that issue of individuality versus togetherness is really important for men today, because there is this tendency, especially from women, to say, share everything, be completely open, and don't hold anything back. I want to change topics here for a minute, because you've studied the history of masculinity as well as our current status. How are men different today than they were, or what are their needs that are different today than 30 years ago or 50 years ago or 100 years, or for that matter, 1,000 years ago?
Well, sure. I think you know, many men today, maybe of somewhat of a similar age range to myself, you know, being in my early 40s, guys of a certain age have inherited a kind of, you know, bad vibes in the culture that really predate any of our births, where, you know, women were, quote, barefoot and pregnant, and, you know, the women of the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and even before that, a time when women couldn't vote. I can't imagine that. And yet we've inherited a kind of occasional hostility out there in the culture, which I think is just a pendulum swing back to normal, where men and women are truly, truly equal in how society treats them and what roles they have. But it's now swung so far to a culturally unhealthy place that I think is directly responsible for divorce rates and you know, the bad economic times that we're in, how it's damaged almost men only. And we have statistics today where far more women are graduating college. For the first time ever, there are more women in the workplace than there are men. And this old idea of a glass ceiling or an old boys' club is absurd today. The statistic came out a few months ago that if one is a single woman without children, she now makes more money for the exact same job than a single man without children. So the pendulum has swung completely in the reverse direction. And I think where it all came from in the past was, as the evolutionists will say, simply a difference in our body sizes and muscularity. That prior to computers and in ancient history, our bodies were everything. Our ability to do work. Males naturally took the role of being the killers of society, killing animals for food and warring tribesmen for defense. And we were superior to women in terms of killing ability with our muscularity. And that led to us dominating women as a gender for all time up until maybe the rise of feminism. But now we all have computers, so our bodies really don't matter.
Right,
anymore.
Fingers in a mind, right? And that,
yeah.
And women's minds are certainly as powerful as men's minds.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of minds, you put together a course called Mind OS. Would you talk about that?
Sure. That is a general course for general personal growth, which I think is the same as spiritual growth. I think psychological maturity and spiritual maturity are one and the same. And it lays everything out almost like an MRI machine for your character development and your personal growth. It's all visual, diagrammatic. It's all a set of maps that tell you step by step what to do to grow each individual part of the psyche or the conscious mind into a more and more mature state. And it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. It's not gender specific. And it's all about your conscious mind, how to become more and more mature, whether you're male or female.
Well,
it's a unification model of all of the psychologies that predate it.
What would you say the virtues or qualities of mature masculine power are? What does that look like?
Well, you know, if we hit the mature part, that's what I use MindOS for, the operating system of the human mind. My favorite quote regarding that is from philosopher Epictetus, who said, "Character is destiny." So if you're a man or a man who loves a woman and wants to help her grow, and you want to steer toward a destiny for yourself, not a fate. Fate we have no choice over. It's what's going to happen. But destiny is a possible future for your life, the kind of marriage or relationship you'd want, or dating life you'd want if you so choose, the kind of career you would want, the kind of physical health you would want. If you want to steer toward a particular destiny, then I would theorize that the higher your maturity level, the more power you are going to have with your conscious mind at steering toward that. Now, the masculinity part of mature masculine power is that which is animal in you. It's that which is unconscious, instinctual, reflex-based, and uniquely male, very different, worlds different from femininity. We need that core power in us to fuel our efforts at growing and reaching a destiny that we want.
So it sounds like there are physical virtues, intellectual virtues, emotional virtues and spiritual virtues. Is that, would you say that?
I would divide the mind in its most simple form into two parts, the conscious and the unconscious, just like Freud. The conscious would contain the emotions, the intellect, decision-making capacity, and boundaries. That's the simplest division of the conscious mind in my model. And then the second part of the mind and behavior would be our instincts, which are also one and the same as our passions. So follow this line of reasoning about what is masculinity really? Masculinity is your skill with women, that's plural. Whether you're single or married, you know you are attractive and can attract women and understand them and be known by them. And your progress on your career mission. And I call it a mission rather than just a job or a career because it's what you're on earth to do. Besides have children and besides have a woman, what are you on earth to do with your time and your energy and your resources? Those two things are what compose masculinity in my model, and here's why. If the instincts are all about survival and reproduction, then these two areas are our modern way of describing our survival and our reproduction. Reproduction is how do you do with women, how do you communicate with them, and survival is our sense of our career mission. What am I here on earth to do? When a man loses a job, unlike how women might generally respond, the man feels like his life is threatened, even if that's irrational. This area of the mind is irrational. It's not based in logic. It's based in instinct. So you feel horrible if you lose a job, like life-threatening horrible. Well, if we work on these two core areas of being masculine, women and our career mission, then we are guaranteed to always be growing a sense of what you could call vitality or passion. So when we hear other public speakers that you probably know well use the word passion in more of a sort of cheerleading motivational way, I don't like that to take away from the deep scientific roots of what is this word passion. It's one of two things. Anytime you've ever heard the word passion, it's either referred to sexuality or it's referred to being alive or life and death issues like a crime of passion or the passion of the Christ. That's not a romantic film. It's a film about a death.
Yeah, I like the term you used, vitality. I think that's a great term.
Vitality. So that's mature masculinity. And finally, what is power? Let's just borrow from physics. Power is an amount of work that can be done in a unit time. In other words, how much work and energy, efficiency, can we have in the shortest amount of time? That means technology. So power is technology. It's that which speeds you ahead most quickly to what you want for your life with the least waste of energy. That's power.
That's great.
And that's what we do. That's what we do.
Excellent. Well, I want to open the conversation up to our audience. If you have a question for Dr. Paul, press 1. And if you're on the webcast, you can use the question posting function. Or if you're on Facebook, you can post a question on Facebook. And our mighty technology manager, Ben, will... I'll turn it over to you, Ben, to see if there are questions from the audience. And we'll do that for a few minutes, and then we'll have a time when you can get together with other participants, with other people of like mind, and have a conversation with them after we end.
Fantastic.
Great. So, yes, there is. We have Peter here. Peter, go ahead. You're live.
Okay. Question for Dr. Paul is about maintaining a mysterious relationship yet still being connected. Just tell me if this is kind of a problem that you've seen men come to you with. Is the main problem is they're way too open in the beginning, and that kind of does detract from the relationship. And I'm just wondering, how do you connect without being too open?
Great question.
Well, you know, that's a great question. I would back us up to the big picture in that regard and say, what causes a man to be too open too early with a woman? Think of it this way. When you were a boy, how did you appeal to your mom? With extreme openness. And it worked for you back then. It's what a mom responded to, was you saying, I hurt my foot, or I feel sick, or I'm hungry. You were completely open with your needs and desires to your mom, and she loved you for it and responded to it. So really what we're all talking about, I think sometimes one of the reasons we're all here is because what used to be called initiation is missing from modern society for men. There is no celebration of the junction point between going from boy thinking to man thinking. And boy thinking is completely open. Man thinking is more playful, probably more private, and less threatened with rejection for not being completely open.
Boy, that is
so I'd say start with having the right mindset of a man, not a boy, and see a woman as a peer, not a mom to appeal to.
Powerful.
And you
powerful
will,
advice. Thank you.
Got it?
Yeah.
All right.
So we have time for one more question.
Great. We have Ridge. Go ahead, Ridge, you're live.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
Hey there.
Right ahead.
Hey, one of the things that I experience in my masculinity is that I'm a commercial carpenter, and one of the things that I notice in my work is that it seems like the person with the biggest vitality, for example, the one who's most knowledgeable, the one who I wish I had my question more clear here. But it's really about the battle that I experienced amongst men, you know, groups of men that just happens naturally in masculinity, and how, you know, it always seems like there's a staging of who's in charge and who's not in charge, or who's better and who's not.
Oh, that's a great question. Let me see if I can rephrase it, because I have the same question. So when men are trying to out-alpha each other, there's kind of pushing and pulling and climbing to the top of the heap and leaving your brothers in the dust or at the bottom of the heap. Is there another way to do that? Is there another way to shine as a vital man? And what about all those guys who are not alpha, who are beta and gamma and delta?
Oh, I love this question, and I have a random film suggestion for you. Okay, you've probably never seen this, but see the old film from, I think, the late 90s with Chris O'Donnell called Vertical Limit, and watch the first scene where there is a life and death decision that has to be made, and you'll know what I'm about to say, what it means. There's destructive competition that is based in what psychoanalysts call pathologic narcissism, and then there is gentlemanly competition. So when guys have a healthy banter where they call each other names and make fun of each other, when someone's not narcissistic, it's done in a spirit of brotherhood and teamwork and testing out the other guy's mettle if he's going to be on your same team. We have to do that to each other. And it's very healthy and very masculinizing to do. But what you need to be able to recognize in other men is whether they are mature and a teammate, or are they out for themselves and narcissistic. And then you will know what to do about the competition they present you with.
Great. That's excellent. So, Paul, you have a number of courses. You have the Mind OS course. You have a course called KWML for men, and you also have one called Mature Masculine Power. Your website is menpsychology.com.
And men's plural.
Oh, men's. That's men's plural, menspsychology.com. Thank
yeah.
you. And if those of you in the audience, especially those of you on Maestro, would like to be on Dr. Paul's mailing list, press 1 now, and we'll grab your emails and hand them to him, and then he can be in further communication with you. If you're on the webcast, you'll need to go to menspsychology.com and sign up there to find out more. Or you can send an email through the Shift Network's Facebook page. You can send us a message, and we'll get you on Dr. Paul's mailing list. So great. So those of you who press 1, your email address will be handed to Dr. Paul, and I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us. It's been really enlightening for me.
Well, thank you back. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you. Well, and thank you to all of the listeners. We really appreciate your being here. We'd love for you to continue the conversation on our Facebook page. That's our main way of communicating with you. You can carry on the topics on Facebook, answer and respond to other people's ideas and suggestions. And the other thing we're going to do is if you'd like to stay on the line, we will put you into groups of 3 or 4 people where you can communicate with other like-minded people and talk about the topics you'd like to talk about. The way to do that is to simply stay on the line after we say goodbye. And we're doing this in 3 ways. If you are a man and would like to be with other men in those groups, if you'd like to be in a men's only group, press 1. If you are a woman and would like to be in a woman's only group, press 2. And if you are a man or a woman and would like to be in a mixed group, press 3. So those of you who would like to stay on, press 1 for men only, 2 for women only, and 3 for mixed groups. And you can talk with each other for as long as you'd like and up until our next program. And speaking about our next program, who's coming up next is the award-winning producer and movie director Barnett Bain, who produced What Dreams May Come, one of my favorite movies. And he's going to be talking about the paradox of masculine power. What works is being more fully yourself, and that'll be hosted by my co-host, Stephen Dynan. So also look at the calendar to see other great programs coming up. That's ultimatemenssummit.com/calendar. And we so appreciate your being with us. Dr. Paul, thank you for your time.
And, thank you.
And, best wishes to all of you in your becoming 21st century people. So thanks a lot. Bye-bye now.